Shalom Aleichem, Rav Mike, can you hear me? Am I clear? Okay, fantastic. First of all, before I begin, I just wanted to thank, once again, the incredible Rav Moshe Freilich, who is in the middle of a massive challah bake over here. So thank you for taking out the time to start the shir over here. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Be'ez Hashem Yisbarach. Today, I promise you, the shir is going to be something special. We're going to talk about something I've never spoken about before, which is the nature of money, and we're going to connect it to Rosh Chodesh Kislev, which is the month that brings in Chanukah, and it's okay. We can start talking about Chanukah right now as we enter into the world of Kislev, and Chanukah looms. The message that we're going to say today is not a Chanukah message. It is an eternal message, a message that we have to take into our lives every single day. So let's begin at the very beginning. We, meaning the ones of us who over here, Rav Mike Ravinsky, Dave Rotenberg, and everyone else, Rav Moshe Freilich, you're all part of a Chabura where every Thursday night, this time of the week, we learn Maseches Shabbos. It works out beautifully. We've discussed this last year. Why is it that the story of Chanukah appears in Shabbos? It appears in the second parak of Shabbos, parak Bava Madlikim. And I'm going to read to you the Chanukah story, the way you learned it, as little boys, little girls, the way we learned it, the first time that we learned it, fresh from the Gemara. The Gemara asked the famous question, my Chanukah, what is Chanukah all about? Daf Kaf Aleph Amud Beis. So the Gemara says, my Chanukah, the Tana Rabbanon, the rabbis learned, b'kafhei b'kislev, yemei d'chanukah, tamin inyan, d'limisped behind, l'lisanis behind, which means that there are 8 days that the rabbis set aside, starting off with the 25th of Kislev, where you should you shouldn't fast, and it is a time of, you're not allowed to give hespedim. Why? Why is it a special time? Because once upon a time, the following story happens. Once upon a time, nichnesu yavanim leheichal. The Greeks, those nasty Greeks, they entered into the heichal, into the Beis HaMikdash, timu kol hashamanim shebeheichal, and then they made impure all the oils in the heichal. So those were the bad guys, the Greeks. What did they do? They were metame the oils. One thing and one thing only is mentioned over here in the story over here. Then the Hasmoneans and their Malchus came along and were misgaber, the Nitzchum, they beat the Greeks. Badko, they checked out, leimatzu ele pach echa shel shemen, they found one vial of oil, shehayamunach b'chais b'shel kohen gadol, it was only enough for 1 day, a miracle happened, it was enough for 8 days, and Shana Acheres, Kabum Ba'asim Yamin Tevim Ba'Halo Vahidah. They made it into a time for Halo Vahidah. So those of you who are just tuning in, all I've said so far is the Gemara that we all know is the basic bare story of the Chanukah story. The Chanukah story begins with one thing and one thing only. What you need to know is once upon a time there were the bad guys were the Greeks, and the Greeks came into the Beis HaMikdash, and they were metame the shmonim. They made impure all the oils, and then we came in, the good guys, the chashmonaim, we found Baruch Hashem, one pach hashemen, and that was enough to last for 8 days, and later on, we made it into a yamzuf. So if we stop the shir now, and we ask ourselves, what's Chanukah about? One thing is all you need to know. The tumah was on the shemen, and the solution was the one pach hashemen, and everything worked out fine. Now, what I'm going to read to you is the Rambam. So the Rambam comes along. I got my little trusted Rambam, which apparently this is the Frankel version. They just came out with the new set. They have expanded this into 2 volumes, which would have been interesting to me because I'm about to ask a question, and it could be that the new volumes have more information that I'm looking for. The Rambam does not mention a story about one gzera of the Greeks, one terrible thing, but rather, can you guess the number he's going to be reaching? 8 things. He mentions 8 things that happened in those times. Not one, but eight. What are the eight things? Let me read it to you. For those of you that want to know where I'm reading from, this is the Rambam, Perek Gimel, Hilchos Chanukah. Perek Aleph and Perek Beis is actually Hilchos Megillah. But by Sheni, in the second temple, Kishumolchu Yavam, when the Greeks reigned, Gazru Gzeris al Yisrael, they made decrees. How many? There's going to be eight. Number one is, it says over here, Batlu Datum. Batlu Datum, they removed our religion. So what exactly is this referring to? There's different opinions. I'm going to go with the one that works simplest for me, is that Batlu Datum, that there's another girsa that says Batlu Dinam. Basically, they came along and they said Jewish court laws are now removed. And now we have Greek courts of laws. You had to, Megillas Tanis, Perek Hay. It's brought down in the Medrash that says that one of the gezeiras of the Greeks is that we were not allowed to have our own jurisprudence, the Torah based in, but rather we had to have Greek based ins. Number one. Number two, Shlohinichu Aysam Lasik B'Torah. They didn't let us study Torah. So here again, it's brought down in the Shiltas and other Midrashim that says there was a gzera that you weren't allowed to study Torah. Torah become hidden underground. We weren't allowed to study Torah. Number three, that they didn't allow us mitzvos. What's mitzvos? So the most famous Medrash of all is that they took away Shabbos, they took away Rosh Chodesh, and they took away Bris Milah. Then comes what I want to talk about. Upashtu Yadam B'Mamayinam. They spread their filthy Greek hands on our money. Okay, hold that thought. We're going to go back to it in a moment. But one of the bad things they did was they spread their hands against Jewish money. I'm not explaining that yet. What I want you to hear is that number five in the list is Ubabnei Sehem and on their daughters. So the Rambam says is that four and five of the decrees of the Greeks is that they spread their filthy hands on number one, our money, and number two, our daughters. So the daughters' ones, we all know, the Gemara talks about it. The Gemara says that every single Jewish girl on her wedding night had to be defiled by the local Greek commander. When it says Pashtia Deim B'Mnesen, it wasn't a random system where they abused Jewish girls, but rather a very, 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 very specific system that they had to mevatel the kedusha of the Jewish girl by taking her away on the wedding night, the night of greatest kedusha, and taking her over to the local Greek commander. That was the fifth gezera of the Greeks against the Jews. And number six and seven is nichnasu lehechal. They came into the Beis Hamikdash. Number seven, parts of a pirtzes. They made, as the Mishnah brings down in Midos, they made 13 breaches in the walls. And finally, number eight, Vitimu Hataharas. So here we're back into familiar territory. They made impure everything that was pure. He doesn't specifically mention Shemen, but we can assume that he's referring to the fact that they made impure the Shemen. So these are eight things. The Rambam is basically taking from all the Midrashim and boiling it down to eight decrees that the Greeks made against the Jew. The eighth one is the one that the Gemara brings down. The fact that they took the Shemen and they made it impure. What was number four? Number four was that they put their hands against the money. So I want to know exactly what this is referring to. There's a lot of Sfarim that I have over here that talk about it. I have a sefer over here, a collection of all kinds of midrashim, and they go through the Rambam and they give all kinds of possibilities. What is it referring to? I have my Rebbe sefer, or Rav Ram Gurwitz. He has a little essay on this question over here. The problem is as follows, is that all the midrashim that they try and bring down is where the Greeks cause monetary loss. The Greeks cause monetary loss. It's not really something that belongs to Hanukkah. It's something that belongs to Purim. The very first thing that we learn when someone asks us, what is the difference between Hanukkah and Purim? Hanukkah is all about spiritual defilement. some making something kadosh and making it something tamei, taking something special and losing that special edge to it. When it comes to Purim, so Purim is about physical destruction. They wanted to destroy our bodies. They wanted to destroy our property. They wanted to destroy our money. Ushlalam lavais. They wanted to come along and lay down the spoils of the Jewish people. So finding a medrash in Hanukkah where, let's say, the Greeks gave us taxation, or let's say we mentioned earlier that the Greeks forced us to use their court of laws, so money may have been taken away from us and given over to the local government, and therefore we lost money. That's got nothing to do with the Hanukkah story. There's another medrash that also could be a possible solution. Megillas Taris, Kol mi sheyesh leshar, yachlech al karnei, she'ein achelek melekei Yisrael. So a few people want to suggest, this is what we're referring to. We're referring to the Pash Yedem on the Mainam, is referring to that we had to write on the horns of a donkey, excuse me, the horns of an ox, that we have no chelek, we have no connection, lelekei Yisrael, to the God of Israel. But that doesn't fit in with the words. The Rambam says that Pashtu Yedeim B'mamayna, they spread their greasy, filthy hands on our money. What's that got to do with making a declaration on our money that we have no connection to the God of Israel? So obviously, I want to say my own thing. Obviously, I want to say something brand new, and I think very, very powerful, and directly applies to our daily living in how we understand what money is all about. So for those of you just joining us, all I've done so far is basically say two things. Number one, the Gemara mentions the Hanukkah story is one thing and one thing only. It's a story about oil. The Rambam mentions eight things. The eighth thing, number eight, is about the oil. Number four is that they came and they contaminated our money. What exactly is that referring to? What's that all about? So there's something about Hanukkah and money that needs to be spoken out in a proper way. Now, it just happens to be very, very interesting that the Gemara starts to begin what you and I call Hilchos Hanukkah. The Gemara in Daf Kaf Beis starts to bring down the laws of Hanukkah one after the other. And one of the first things that the Gemara talks about is actually something that we spoke about. Those of you who are in the Chabura over here, welcome with Eli Loib, Rabbi Michal Friedman. All the Bnei Chabura know that last year we spent a lot of time talking about Bizui Mitzvos. And there the Gemara brings down, and I quote, Ama Rabbi Yehuda, Ama Rav Asi, Ama Rav, Asa Lahartzis Ma'os Keneged Ner Chanukah. You're not allowed to count your money next to the light of Hanukkah. The king was in his counting house, counting out his money. If you're the king and you're counting your money, you better not do it near the Ner Chanukah. Don't use the light of Hanukkah to count your money. Actually, this is the makar for the minhag, the custom that we have what's called a shamash. A shamash adds an extra light so that if you're doing something mundane nearby, so therefore you're actually benefiting from the shamash and not from the Ner Chanukah. The Gemara explains that the reason why you cannot count money near Ner Chanukah is because of bizui mitzvos. You are degrading the mitzvah. You are degrading the mitzvah by doing something mundane with money near a thing that is so holy called today in Israel, they call it a Chanukiah. We still call it traditionally the menorah. The menorah is kadosh, and you should not be doing something chol, like counting your money. By the time it gets into the Shulchan Aruch, where the Mishnah Berurah brings down this halacha, it mentions money, but it's very clear that you cannot do anything that is secular. You can't read a newspaper next to the Hanukkah lights. You can't do whatever it is, figure out your recipes and measure out the exact thing you need for whatever you're baking using the lights of the menorah. You cannot do anything that is mundane, but the Gemara purposely chooses the example of money, I think for reasons that we're about to explain. And before the class gets really good, l'chaim, l'chaim, l'chaim. Once again, thank you, Rabbi Dave Rotenberg, for this Harry Potter mug. Yum. Okay. So finally, we get to the minhag of Chanukah gelt. So I don't know what you guys do in your own home. I don't know what you saw when you were growing up, the minhag of Chanukah gelt. I grew up in London. It was not a big deal, only because my dad was not from the most generous. Now, I'm just kidding. He was the most generous, but whatever it was, okay, we got a little bit of money on Chanukah. My chavrusa is Reb David Kamenetsky, and he actually has very vivid memories of the excitement on the fifth day. On the fifth day of Chanukah, every single grandchild with the Kamenetsky family name, grandchildren of Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, would get on the fifth day from Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, would get their Dmei Chanukah. It wasn't a lot of money, but it was from the Zeta. It was from Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky. Woohoo. It's great to have the right family name. But I asked him why the fifth, and he said he was pretty sure that the reason for the fifth is because it's the only night on the eighth day, on 8 days of Chanukah, that never, ever falls on Shabbos. So I'll ask Rabbi Ravinsky if that's true. But that's what David Kamenetsky said. Later on, I found it in another sefer that I have over here, Pisky Shuvos. I have over here, it's brought down that Reb Chaim Kanievsky said the same thing about his father, the stipler, that the stipler used to only give to Dmei Chanukah on the fifth night. Why on the fifth night? Because it's the one night that can never, ever fall on a Shabbos. Okay, but whatever the minhag is, by us, it's always the first night. The first night is always the big night. Or I imagine that some of you do it the night that is where the family gets together, whatever it is, family, simchas, doesn't make any difference. The minhag of Chanukah gelt is across the board. Sephardim do it. Hasidim do it. Hasidim make a huge big deal out of it. Last year, 2 years ago, I went to the Belzer Rebbe's Chanukah tish. It's like it's a big deal over here. My good friend, Dr. Michael Wyshansky, has some kind of protexia. He gave me, like, he gave me right to the front. And every bachar gets this little package with Dmei Chanukah from the Rebbe. And it's like that across the board with all Hasidus. I have over here from Rav Chaim Falaji something I don't understand, because he explains the minhag based on Kabbalah. So I'm really, when I say I don't understand, it means I really, really don't know what he's talking about. There are different theories about how the minhag began. Reb Chaim Friedlander in Sif Sei Chaim, in Moedim Beis, page Kuflam and Dalad, he brings down the following. He says that the Panovich Rov and others, they say that the minhag began because the Gzeirah was against the Torah. As we all know, Shemen represents the menorah. The menorah represents Torah Sheval Peh. The menorah represents the yeshiva world. The menorah is all about this thing, right? A page of Gemara. That's what they made Exera against. So therefore, we gave money to yeshiva students. That's how the custom began. And eventually, it just became a minhag to give to all children. We didn't discriminate. And somehow, it ended up the boys and the girls and everybody. But it began by giving money, in the words of the Sif Sei Chaim, you give the money, and eventually they want to do learn Torah l'shem shemaim. Beautiful possibility that the whole thing is all about k'neged Torah. It doesn't really, really sit well in me, because as we all know, that the Chaim Kanievsky and the stipler did not differentiate between the boys and the girls, and it was grandchildren. It was within the family. The fact that there are minhagim to give a lot of tzedakah in the times of Chanukah is a beautiful minhag. But let's be honest, that beautiful minhag applies to all Yom Tovim. Whenever there's a Yom Tov, we always have to remember the poor. And I guess in Chanukah, it makes sense that we focus on yeshivas, because that's the time of the year. We always say that Chanukah is the festival of the yeshiva bachrim, because the gezerah was against Torah, and shemen and oil represents Torah. Beautiful. It still does not properly explain the minhag of Chanukah gelt. I just want to point out that it's Chanukah gelt. We live in Christian America, Canada, wherever you're from, okay? And there they give this time of the year, Xmas gifts. They give gifts. So we're very careful not to give gifts. We don't give presents. The truth of the matter is, I have heard of people that actually give gifts on Hanukkah, and I don't think you should make a big deal about it. Honestly, I don't think it's a big deal. It's a little goyish, okay? It's a little goyish to give gifts. I don't think that my little grandchildren get money from us. I think my wife will give them little presents. But that's just whatever. I don't think it's a big deal. The minhag is dafka money. It's dafka money, to give money. So there's something very big going on over here. I want to share with you a fantastic, deep idea about what's going on behind the scenes. I just want to bring down to you that I have over here from another sefer, a sefer that brings down about the minhagim of counting money. And he says, can you guess? This is, by the way, this is sefer Shari Oira. Shari Oira was written by the son of the Baal HaTanya. So it was the second, the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He wrote sefer Shari Oira. And he says that the reason for the minhag of giving out Hanukkah geld is because of the Rambam. Because the Rambam says, Pash Yadim B'mamayinam. They spread their filthy hands, the Greeks, their tummy hands, their impure hands on our money. So I saw that Reb Nati Stern has just joined us. Reb Nati, Shalom Aleichem. All the way, he has relocated from Kansas to Houston, Texas. I just wanted you, Shkayach, just want to give you a quick summary of the story so far. What we have over here is we have this Rambam that tells us that one of the eight decrees that the Greeks did was against our money. I have just connected it to the minhag of Hanukkah geld based on the Shari Ura, but it's kind of a cyclical problem. What were the Greeks doing, waging war against our money? What exactly does it mean that they waged war against our money? And therefore, we have this minhag to give money, dafka money, not gifts, to give money to our children, to our grandchildren. If you are a Litvak, you give it on the fifth night, because that's the only night that can never fall on Shabbos. That's what the Kamenetsky and the Kinievsky, oh my gosh, it sounds like, you know, keeping up with the Kinievskys and keeping up with the Kamenetskys, all these people, that was their minhag on the fifth night, dafka. What's going on? One more shita is that the reason why we give Hanukkah geld is because you are not allowed to count your money near the menorah. So to remind ourselves of this halacha, we give out money and then we tell our children, here's money, remember not to count it, not to see how much we gave you, using the, well, so to speak, the lights of the Hanukkah. Okay, so I want to share with you a tremendously powerful idea. And to do that, we need to begin at the beginning of the beginning of the beginning of the beginning and ask a simple question. What is money? What does it mean, money? We live in a world where we have all kinds of things that we absolutely need to have in this world. I'm sitting on a chair. I have in front of me a table. Here's a thing called a cup. Inside is a good cup of coffee. And yeah, all these things we need to have in this world. We need to have beds. We need to have houses. We need to have things so that we can buy and we can sell and we can run what's called we need commerce, that we can run our lives to have the things that we need. All these things are things that we have to have in the Bria. We have to have them in creation. Let me ask you a question. Was it absolutely necessary for God to create money? Did God need to say, let me create money? So I'm not an economy expert. I do have an MBA. I can show off. I definitely do have an MBA. But I can tell you the following thing. I'm assuming that if you are an economic historian, you would say that our ancestors back in the Bronze Age, when everything began, they started doing commerce using what's called barter. Barter means the following thing. If I owned a flock of sheep, I would take it to the market and I would come along and give one sheep. I would use to buy whatever, a suit that I'd be able to wear. And the next, I would use the next sheep to buy whatever, a bookcase to keep my books. Well, I didn't have books in those days, but whatever it was, the equivalent that you needed to do. So you'd come along and you would basically use what's called the power of exchange. Everything can be done using this economy called barter. You don't need to have a thing called money. Okay. You don't need to have these things over here. Okay. You don't need to have coins to be able to run an economy. Then one day somebody invented a thing called money. I'm sure that's what they teach. If you are a historian that wants to teach how economy began, somebody somewhere in Mesopotamia probably invented the idea of a coin. And basically it made life simple. So therefore, instead of schlepping your herd of sheep to the marketplace, you would take these coins, and the coins would in turn allow you to be able to get what you needed, and life suddenly became simple. So somebody invented the wheel, and somebody invented, I don't know, these awesome mugs. And somebody actually invented coffee, and all these, how to turn coffee beans into coffee, and all these things that make our lives enhance in the quality of life. But you don't need these things from a Torah viewpoint. It's just convenience. It's just convenience. It's not something, using the words of my Rebbe Rav Moshe Pura, that's muchrach in the Bria. It's not something you need to have in the Bria. So, for example, in the world of halacha, there's a lot of mitzvos. Mitzvos are not there for convenience. Mitzvos exist at the beginning of creation as the tools to connect to God. Mitzvah comes from the word tzav. Tzav means a connector. So all the things that were there in the Beis Hamikdash, and the animals of the Beis Hamikdash had to be created because these are the ways that I connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All the things that we have that involve money in general in Judaism, you don't have to give cash. You don't have to give geld. You don't have to give coins. It's okay to give the equivalent in commodities. So for example, we mentioned beforehand the sanctity of marriage. I married my wife, so I had to give halachically a pruta. I could have taken out of my pocket a pruta, given it to my wife. She wouldn't have been very happy. It's not exactly the right way to start a marriage. It's not what I gave. I gave a shav pruta. I gave the financial equivalent of a pruta in the terms of a golden ring. And you can do that with everything. If I wanted to take my firstborn son and redeem him with a koren, I had to give 5 silver koins. You don't have to. You can give the equivalent in shav kesef. Tanaki speaking, even Meister Sheni, right? Meister Sheni, as you all know, there's a mitzvah that if you don't want to schlep your animals to the Beis Hamikdash, you can turn it into money. And then that money has laws that come with it. But you have a choice. You don't have to do it that way. You can take your animals and bring them all the way to Shlang or Kadesh. So it's a shocking thing to think about that you don't need to have money in creation for you and I to live our Torah lives and for the world to exist. Money is a convenience like everything else. To be honest with you, it's now 2021, soon to be 2022. Money is becoming of diminishing importance because we can do the same thing without using coins. We can use the banking system. So we can take out our little credit cards that now come with Wi-Fi, and we can swipe, and everything can be done. Technically speaking, within a generation, it could be that our children can be born and can live 120 years without once seeing a coin. They don't need it. Everything can be done online. Everything can be done using cryptocurrencies or whatever it may be. Money's just a tool. And the tool, if it can be replaced with something more convenient, let it be that way. What's the problem with what I'm saying? Who here? I see we have a chat over here. You can get, who can write down? There's one exception. There's one mitzvah in the Torah that proves me all wrong. There's one mitzvah in the Torah that without money, you cannot perform the mitzvah. It involves cash, and it's something that is muchrach in the Bria, which proves that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in 7 days, and he created the birds, and he created the fish, and he created the insects, and he created the sun, and he created the moon, he also created money, because it was necessary for one mitzvah and one mitzvah only, that without it, it cannot be.
Machatzis HaShekel.
Thank you very much. Okay, there we go. Okay. So, yeah, picking up Ben, we already mentioned you can use Shav Kesef. But thank you very much, Rabbi Ravinsky, who's driving, I imagine, to, he just performed some kind of a bris somewhere. Are you in Kentucky or are you somewhere bizarre? Where are you? Which corner of the Midwest are you driving through, Rev Mike?
I'm driving from Indiana.
Okay, Ashrecha. I'm in boring old Yerushalayim or Akedish. But be that as it may, good old Rav Michal correctly says, Machzis HaShekel, the half shekel cannot be given with the equivalent of the half shekel. You have to give the shekel itself. So what's going on over here? What's happening behind the scenes? So first of all, let's figure out how this thing works exactly. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. He created things that were necessary for mitzvos. We now find out that there's one usage for money that must be, because you need it to whatever it is. Every mitzvah is a way of connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's one mitzvah called the Chatzi Shekel. As you all know, every Jew has to give a Machzis HaShekel that goes into this huge, big container in the Beis HaMikdash, and it was used for the Karbonos Tzibor, to bring the public sacrifices on behalf of the Jewish people. And by the way, for the ladies that are listening, this is the big argument why women possibly should be chayv in davening Musaf. Musaf corresponds to the Karbonos, and they also have a connection to the Machzis HaShekel. The point is as follows. The Machzis HaShekel proves to us that there must be a necessity for money in this world. What does money give to this world that without money, it wouldn't happen at all? The bartering system on its own is not enough. Only money can do this. So the answer is, in society, from the beginning of time until today, doesn't make any difference, all the way from the great sale in last week's parasha of the Maaseh Machpelah with Avraham Avinu, all the way to your shopping, your online shopping on Amazon that you did today, everything has in common. Money defines value. In Hebrew, erech. Erechin means the value of things is defined by money. So what happens is society decides that things in this world have value. Things in this world have what's called a chashivas. It's an incredible thing in the Hebrew language. In you study Gemara, in the Gemara, when it talks about cheap and expensive, if you learn Bava Metzia, Bava Basra, you learn about cheap and expensive, it's called Yukra Vezula, right? Yukra is something expensive, Zula is something cheap. So Yukra and Zula, which is basically how the markets fluctuate, things go up, things go down, supply and demand. I'll never forget when I was a young man in my mid-20s, and Rav Moshe Pera taught us the fifth parak of Bava Metzia, and we learned the laws of ribis, the laws of interest. For the first shiur, the first 1 hour, he taught us about how a market economy worked in ancient times. He started off with a modern day economy, and then he brought it back to the way it worked back then, those days. To understand the economy is necessary for learning the laws of interest and how these things work. But the bottom line is that value is called yukra vizula. The word yukra is the same Hebrew word as the word yakar. Yakar means something valuable, something precious, something special. Something honorable, like Megillas Esther, what's his name? Achashverosh says that women should give yakar lebaleim, should give honor to their husbands. So the word yakar and the word yukra are connected because conceptually they're one and the same. And similarly, you have the word zula. The word zula literally means something cheap. but the word zo, which also means something degraded, something unimportant, something that you look down upon. So the value system of how we see what is chashuv and what is not chashuv boils down into the same language in Hebrew, meaning that essentially it's the same idea of how the monetary system works. So I don't want to like freak you all out. You're starting to think this sounds like an economics class over here. But you should know that the economy, which works around money, is also the economics of value, of what is chashiv in our lives and what is not chashiv in our lives. So let's talk about Judaism. Let's talk about our value system. Let's talk about what is yakar and what is zol in our world. When we daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our tefillos, again and again and again, we declare to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we have a value system, and our value system sees you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as the ultimate value. So on Rosh Hashanah, we say, Maloich akol ha'olam kulo b'chvoidecha, with your kavod, right? Kavod means you are that thing that represents kavod. V'inase akol ha'aretz b'yakarecha. Here's the word yakar. You should be the measure of what is precious to us. And we say this throughout our davening. Tomorrow night, Shabbos morning, we say, Ein ke'erchecha Hashem nakinu ba'olam hazeh. Ein ke'erchecha. Nothing compares to your value. So in tefillah, we say that, okay, whatever it is it could be that the most expensive Porsche, the most expensive car costs whatever, $500,000, and the most expensive house costs whatever, hundreds of millions of dollars. But suddenly when it comes to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you are beyond value. You are infinite in your value. That's the way we talk in our tefillos. Something that is yakar, that is beyond value. We have that phrase, beyond value, even without bringing religion into it. If somebody would come up to you and say to you, I want to buy your child. So I'm nervous that some of you are starting to think, yeah, that's an interesting thing. Maybe it would solve my financial issues. God forbid, if you are a normal, healthy parent, which today in America is something you don't take for granted. If you are a normal, healthy parent, your child is beyond value. You would throw the person out and say, my child is not something that we can talk about when it comes to sales. I was just in Morocco with my wife, and that was it. When we went to the market, I told the locals that for enough camels, I'll give you my Rebbetzin. So that is, obviously, I have to make sure that everyone realizes that that was a joke. And yes. And certain things are outside the realm of value. Certain things are beyond value. The ultimate thing that is beyond value is anything to do with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Ein ke'erkecha Hashem lekin v'olam hazeh. You are the ultimate thing that breaks all the rules of value. So now we can understand something incredible. And let's go and remember what we learned in fifth grade or wherever it was that we learned this thing. Why do we give a half a shekel? Why do we give a half a shekel? Ostensibly, that allows us to connect to the world of Tzibur. Through this, we become part of the community. Every Jew gives this. This is the way to find out how many Jews there are in Klal Yisrael for a census. But it's focused on something that is outside the world of counting. Tzibur, the truth of the matter, Tzibur means that you are no longer a number. You're part of something infinitely bigger. Tzibur, as you all know, once you pass the magical number of 10, there's no difference between 11 and 100 million people. It's all the same. It's all Tzibur. Tzibur means that you've broken out of this individuality to something that is beyond, something that is outside. So what's the first thing we learned about the half a shekel? The half a shekel is only a half a shekel. Why do we give a half a shekel? So the Torah says, Kazeh Yitnu. And the Gemara Menachah says, Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, let me explain to you what it's all about. And he showed Moshe Rabbeinu a chati shekel made out of fire. So that's what the Gemara says. It creates a tremendous visual. Moshe Rabbeinu has this vision of a half a shekel out of fire. And with this, all his questions are now explained. My dear friends, why does Moshe Rabbeinu have to see a half shekel out of fire? What exactly is he looking for? I understand that he didn't know what the menorah looked like. And Hashem showed him a menorah out of fire because the menorah was complex with all its flowers and its knobs and all the different parts to it. He had to see a visual. Why do you need a visual of a chatzi shekel? Moshe Rabbeinu did not understand the monetary system. He did not know what a shekel looked like and therefore what a chatzi shekel looks like. What Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to understand, how can money connect to the infinity of value? Money is the value of this physical world. Money is the way that I buy things that I can bring into my house or things that I can bring into my field, investments. But what's it got to do with the world of the Beis HaMikdash, ultimately the world of Sibur that is outside the world of value, that connects to the infinite value? Hashem shows, and as the Gemara brings down, he took it from Mitachas Kisei HaKavod. He took it out of from the heavenly throne. The heavenly throne represents the higher worlds and says, if you want to connect to the higher worlds, you give your half shekel, and that half shekel will connect to a half shekel of fire. Fire symbolizes the world that is beyond, connected once again to Hanukkah. Is that fire is always symbolizes something that defies gravity. It takes us to a world that is infinite. And therefore the chatzi shekel that is made out of fire, this fiery half shekel, is the half shekel that is, so to speak, God's half of the half shekel. So we give one half and God gives the other half. And through that, you and I connect to infinity. We connect to a world beyond. This is exactly what we can learn when HaKadosh Baruch Hu introduces one mitzvah that must be done with money, that a Jew, when they value money, as much as it connects to something that is infinite, something that is beyond. It's just an incredible thing. You talk about Jewish values. How are we supposed to look at money? It just so happens to be, I didn't even realize I had this bag over here. These little shekels that I have over here, the Israeli shekel value, this money, okay, that they have over here. All these shekels over here, I actually keep them because every Friday night, when my wife lights candles, I take out a little silver stocker box. Before she lights, I put a coin or a few coins that she puts it in because it's an Indian to give stocker. As it always is, chesed always precedes our mitzvos wherever possible. For us, the word shekel comes from the word lishkol, which means to give. So a Jew sees this thing over here, which it's beautiful that our country has, we use a thing called a shekel. Okay, this is an Israeli shekel over here. I don't know if you can see it. It's a shekel. Shekel literally means lishkol, which means to give. I don't see a taking shekel. I only see a giving shekel. Money for me is to do an act of chesed, and therefore it connects to something infinite. It's interesting. The most serious out of all the mitzvos when it comes to money is ribbis. I know that a lot of you think that ribbis is just another way of saying an Ashkenazi frog as a joke. Okay, ribbis. Okay, it's not so funny. But ribbis means that I'm not allowed to give you money to help you out, where in the back of the mind, I get to take from you more than I gave. It turns money from a giving shekel to a taking shekel. Ribbis, and the whole world of ribbis, ribbis is gematria, it's the same letters, right? Taryab, ribbis is 612, connected all 613 mitzvos. Because what you've done is you've taken the marechet of value in this world, instead of connecting it to the infinite, which is what tzedakah always does, you're now bringing it down, as you're going to figure out where I'm going with this class, into the world where the Greeks gave value. You flip the whole thing around. You have undermined everything. The whole purpose of Jewish money. Let's say God gives you a very good parnasa. Halavai to all of you. Think of us people in Yerushalayim. Imagine you have a good job. So how much money do you need to live? $100,000 a year, $200,000 a year. At some point, your money is extra. What do you do with that extra money? So Hashem says to you, I gave you that money to be my gabbai, tzedakah, to give beyond. Which in other words saying, to connect to the world of the infinite. It's interesting, we're here in the Shemitah year, as you are fully aware, even if you're from afar, here in Yerushalayim, we're in it, in the Shemitah year. At the end of the Shemitah year, we write a prosbul for Shemitah's Ksafim. Same idea, Shemitah's Ksafim means that just like you have the agricultural world, is all anchored into spirituality, similarly the monetary world, once every 7 years, all the debts that we have disappear, and we remind ourselves that a person should not be constrained physically into the world of money. Money should be something that can set you free to connect to the infinite. So all the halachos that we have in money again and again and again is to remind us about the chati shekel, that the second chati shekel is made out of fire. The one that completes it is something that doesn't belong here to this world. Hi. I had a thought. Okay, I don't even know if it's true or not. I had a thought. Ramosh Shapiro used to always say that you can talk about the parsha all the way till Friday afternoon. So we're still in Chai Asara. Chai Asara works 6 days backwards and 6 days forwards. He used to quote it. I don't know what his makar is, where his source is. We can still talk about Chai Asara. The first major transaction we mentioned was Maris HaMachpelah. What is Maris HaMachpelah? Maris means a cave, Machpelah, that is doubled over. I don't know it from the Kabbalah's farm. I know this from the Hasidish's farm. A double over means that you got the higher one and the lower one. The higher one, which the Avos and the Imos knew about, the higher one, which Avraham Avinu could see and Ephraim could not, corresponds to, as we say in Kabbalah, to the higher hey of Hashem's name, Yud Hey Vav Ke, Yud Ke Vav Ke, and then you have the lower one. Chevron, Chibor, is where the higher worlds and the lower worlds meet. It's the connection. Chevron is where the higher worlds and the lower worlds meet. I don't mean to be rude to our Islamic friends, but they can't see that higher world. Only Avram could see it. Ephron was blind. He couldn't see it. He saw this was the connection to something. So the first transaction involving a Jew gives a ton of money because he wants to connect to Maris HaMachpelah, that's something where the lower part connects to the higher part. And that's how you have exactly like the Chati Shekel, the second half shekel, is that higher cave, the higher Maris HaMachpelah, that Avram could see, and Sarah could see, and Adam and Chava could see, and Yitzchak and Rivka could see, and Yaakov and Leah could see. But the non-Jewish world was blind, could not see that higher level over there. So now I want to quote to you from the Yerushalmi. So I have to tell you, I found this Yerushalmi again from my Rebbe Sefer Erev Ram. Yerushalmi is quoted by a Ritva in Avodah Zarah, Ayin Hei Amid Beis. It's talking about the mitzvah of Tfilas Kelim. What does Tfilas Kelim mean? That this mug given to me by the great Dave Rotenberg, right? This mug over here, when I got it, actually it's a Suffolk, but if it was made out of metal, I'd have to make it kosher. I put it into a mikvah, and it comes out, and I can now use it. What does it mean that Tfilas Kelim, why do Kelim need to go into a mikvah? This is a quote from Yerushalmi. Let me give you this quote. The quote is, the quote is, "Sheyetsu mitumasam shel nachrim lekdushasam shel Yisrael." When it was under the hands of the non-Jew, it was tamei. Why? Because it belonged to a non-Jew, and it enters into the Jewish realm. It needs kedusha, so therefore this little mug has to go through geiris in a mikvah, says Yerushalmi. Things that belong to the non-Jew they are called Tomei until they pass through this mikvah, and now they're ready for the Jew. Let me translate this into the language of tonight. As you all know, is Rosh Chodesh Kislev, into the language of Hanukkah. The tumah of the economic system was created by the Greeks. The tumah of the, even though of course Tfilas Kenan goes back to the Midianites, but the idea is what they wanted to do is to create a tumah in money in exactly the way they wanted to create a tumah in the Jewish women. Remember how the Rambam says it. Upashti yaram. They took their hands and they were metame money and Jewish women. So this is not the same tumah as the tumah of the oils. There, the tumah of the oils is the pashtus, the tumah of the zav, right? Whatever it is that the chazal put on non-Jews, a tumah, and they passed onto the oil and they were metame it. That's classic tumah and tahara of the Beis Hamikdash. Is the classic tumah and tahara that we learn in Sefer Vayikra, right? The idea of tumah and tahara. But there's other ways of tumah, of contaminating. A Greek can contaminate a Jewish woman on her wedding night, because that's the night where she's supposed to get kedusha, hariat mukudeshesli, and they bring it down into the lowly tumah. All they did was have relations with the Jewish woman. At that point then, they have infected the woman with their tumah. It's not the same tumah as the tumah of contaminating oil, but it's the same thing, is that we disconnect from the world of infinity and we lock it in to our lowly physical world. That's what the Greeks wanted. That's exactly what they did with money. It's exactly what they did with money. They wanted that the monetary system should be based on the Greek value system, not the matbea shel eish, not the fire, not the maris hamachpela. It should be the Greek value system. What's the Greek value system? So I'm a little bit embarrassed to do this, but I actually went online to make sure that I still had it right. When I was bar mitzvah, I was 13, the first album that I bought was called Dark Side of the Moon. I'm not sure that anyone of you guys, maybe Michal Friedman, I don't know if any are old enough to know what it's all about. But in those days, in the 1970s, Nati, have you heard of Pink Floyd? I don't even know. It's before your time. And there, one of their most famous songs was called Money. Oh, Mike just came back. It's called Money. Okay, the words were money, it's a gas. Grab that cash with both hands and make a stash. New car, caviar, four-star J-Dream. Think I'll buy me a football team. I can actually sing it for you. But the point is that for them, money, and even though that it was satire, that someone was satire making fun of the system, is a world that is crazy over money. Because with money, you buy the Greek value system of tumah. That's what they wanted, to metame everything. So everything, with money, you make money so you can connect to the Greek value system of what has erech, what truly has value. So let's come back full circle over here. But the Rambam lists eight things. Number eight is the ultimate one, because that's the tumah of shemen, which is the tumah of the Torah itself, of the essential Torah itself, but everything else that comes out of Torah, which is the Jewish family and the Jewish economic system, they wanted to metame that as well. And that's exactly, Pashti Yadayim B'Mamayinam, or Pashti Yadayim B'Bneseyim, it's all the same thing, is that there should be no Chati Shekel Shel Eish. That's what the Greeks wanted. Now we understand the Jewish custom, the halacha, that you're not allowed to count money, because we're very sensitive on Hanukkah when it comes to money. We're worried that that God forbid you should do something mundane with money near the Kedusha of the Menorah. So we keep that separated. But then the minhag of Hanukkah gelt is the exact opposite. Hanukkah gelt, we give the next generation and say, this is Hanukkah gelt, Hanukkah money. This is our value system, which connects to where a freelander says, we secretly hope that they'll use it to buy sfarim, or they'll use it to give tzedakah, or they'll use it for something Jewish. But the idea is that what we recreate with Hanukkah gelt is the monetary system that is connecting to the infinite, to the matbea shel eish, to the maris hamachpela, to that which is beyond and that which is infinite. So I want to finish up with a short story, and I have to share you the story. And whenever it was 15 years ago, I was with a group in Europe. We went to a city called Avignon, and there they had the Palais de la Papa, which means the palace where the popes used to sleep and live. And I asked the Shaila, you're allowed to go in it, because it wasn't used for prayer. It was only used for living. And the climax of the tour is that you go into where the Pope actually slept. There was a period in history, I think for 100 years, where Rome was moved to southern France. And that's where the popes were. So I actually was in the bedroom where the Pope used to sleep. And there was a secret room, a small little room. And she asked us to guess what was in there. Everyone just assumed it was connected to Znos, but it wasn't. It was his counting house. The king was in his counting house, counting. And what happened was that the Pope used to make money from the people. They were called indulgences, which allowed them to take money from the masses. And that money, with that, they would free them of their sins. Classic Christianity. It actually was at some point when they needed a lot of money, they would say, give us money up front and then you can go ahead and sin. How about that? What a great religion. So every night when he would go to sleep, the last thing he would do was count his money. That was what the popes used to do. So when we were here in that room, I asked the woman that was showing us around if I can just speak to the group. I switched to Hebrew. I hope she didn't speak Hebrew. And I spoke about Reb Chaim Sanzer. I said, Reb Chaim, the Divrei Chaim, Reb Chaim Sanzer, was known that he was so sensitive to money that at night he couldn't sleep if there was one penny in the house. The story is brought down that he would tell his gabbai, I can't sleep, there's money in the house. And the gabbai would search the house for money and give it tzedakah. And then he would say, no, then there must be, go to the local tavern. And he would go in there and there would be some yid with a bunch of money to give to the Rebbe. And he would say, my Rebbe can't sleep until every penny is given to tzedakah. He said, how incredible it is to contrast the Kedusha of the Divrei Chaim to the Pope in Avignon. So there the money was for him. And by us, the money is to give to tzedakah. So what we need to do, Rosh Chodesh Kislev, is do a recalculate. You see these things, right? You got the money over here. You got to ask yourself, what is our money all about? One thing and one thing only. To do the opposite of the value system, the tsuma of Yavon, which is the whole world that we live in. We're drowning in this. That the money that you make is there for about you. And they're about pleasure. And they're about physicality and everything that the Greeks stood for. And we take the opposite and we connect to them at Be'er Shel Eish. And that's the beautiful, beautiful minhag of Klal Yisrael, of the Chanukah Geld, Dafka money, to remind us that we have our own ma'arechet, our own system of what we do with money. And with that, we teach our children to the next generation that money is a shekel, is something that you give, something that you share, something that you connect to the world of mitzvah that ultimately connects to the chati shekel of Eish that HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed to Moshe Rabbeinu. So all that's left for us is for me to wish you that this Chodesh Kislev, we're going towards the light of Chanukah. We left the darkness of Cheshvan behind us. The second pasuk of the Torah, as you all know, corresponds to Cheshvan. The first is Bereishis Baruch Hashem Shemayim Va'aretz. That's Tishri, that's Bria. The second pasuk is the Cheshvan, Mar Cheshvan, Tohu, Bohu, Choshech, Bnei Tahom. And the third one is Vayeim Hashem, Yehi Ar. That's Chodesh Kislev. Let the light come out. We should be zeicha that that light should be the Irish of Mashiach. We should be zeicha not to be in Indiana, not to be in Houston, not to be in Savannah, Georgia, not to be in Ottawa, but to be in Yerushalayim, HaKadosh, together, so that we can once again give the matbea chati shekel that connects to the matbea shel eish. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much. Have a great Shabbos.
Chodesh to all.
Chodesh.
Thank you.
Thank you, Avi.
Enjoyed very much. Thank you so much.
I appreciate everyone coming. Thank you.